You're welcome back to Religion Matters, KFM's weekly religion reflection and social issues programme. That was Oh Happy Day, which you will recognise from the movie Sister Act. Now, most of you of a certain age will remember well the Ryark series, the very familiar music and the very familiar image which was used. And this month marks the 50th anniversary of the showing of the first ever Ryark documentary on Irish television. Joining me on the phone is Father Dermot McCarthy. Father Dermot is a priest of the Archdiocese of Dublin and up to very recently was the editor of religious programming for RTE television. Good morning, Father Dermot.
Good morning. Good morning, Brenda.
Now, before we talk about Ryark, tell me a little bit more about yourself and how you came to be involved with Ryark in the first place.
Well, I'm originally a native of Ballinamore, County Leitrim, but eventually ended up going to school in Ross Gray, where I became interested in stage things, you know, directing plays and doing lighting for plays and so on. And I suppose I carried that with me into my seminary days in Clonliffe. And a couple of years before I was ordained, Ryark began in 1961, actually, the 31st of December, when RTE first went on air. Ryark was already in production, preparing for putting programs on air. And the first Ryark program went on air on the 12th of January, 1962. Now, I wasn't involved in it at that stage, but a few years later, Joe Dunn, who was the founder of Ryark, along with Des Forrester, came into Clonliffe looking for, I suppose, a young fellow who might be interested in the same kind of work. And he was told about me and came to me and asked me would I like to spend that summer of 1965 working with them. And, of course, would a cat drink milk?
Exactly.
And that's where I began my work with Ryark, and then was continuously working with Ryark, except for a short period when I was in the parish of Athy for 2 years in 70 to 72, but then back again until 1982. And I went to the Pro-Cathedral and eventually ended up became administrator there. And in 1991 came to RTE as editor of Religious Programs Television, as you said.
Yeah.
I'm still involved in RTE, even though I'm retired from the full-time job, but I have a pastoral capacity there to the staff of the place.
And you,
I help
you
out
did
with
that lovely
programs whenever they need a helping hand.
You did that lovely program as well over Christmas, Kneeling in the Ears.
That's right, Mary Kennedy.
Yeah, it was fabulous, fabulous.
Looking back over 50 years of religious worship. There's more to come later in the year, hopefully, about other religious content on 50 years of RTE television.
Yeah, it was a lovely look back. You also worked as a consultant to the Vatican's Council for Communications as well, didn't you?
I did. I was on that Council for Social Communications at the Holy See for, I think, about 7 or 8 years during the late 90s and early aughties, as they call them.
So I'm no pressure on me then talking to such an expert in communications in the church.
We're all on a learning curve when it comes to media, Brenda.
I can
here.
Assure you that I am, anyway. So the 50th anniversary last week, how did Ryark, though, come to start as an organisation? Can you take us back to what happened 50 years ago?
Well, I'll try to be as brief as possible. John Charles McQuaid was Archbishop of Dublin, and it's sometimes said that John Charles started Ryark. That's not accurate, but indirectly, I suppose, he did, in the sense that he wanted to have some priests in the diocese familiar with this new medium called television by the time the station would open. And so he sent Joe Dunn first to Manchester and then with Des Forrester to New York on 3-month courses to learn something about television. And when they came back, Joe and Des realized that the best approach would be to start making their own short films. And they began experimenting with formats and the technology required, and then began to make some short films. And these were shown to the man who was to become the controller of programs in RTE, Michael Barry, one evening in the house where Joe lived, which was the house on Stephen's Green, right beside University Church.
Mm-hmm.
And Barry brought along with him his assistant, Porrig O'Reilly. And Joe had knocked a hole in the wall of upstairs in the listed building, put the projector in his own sitting room, if you like, that he was using as a cutting room, and projected the films onto the wall of his bedroom. And the two executives from the future RTE, our television, sat on his bed and watched these films on the wall of the bedroom. And short films, you know, 10 minutes, 12 minutes. And Barry said, I want those on television when we open. Because there was very little possibility of being able to do home-produced material outside of studio.
Mm-hmm.
And these were programs done around the country.
And what was
so
the
in
content?
Fact, for the first program, was dealt with the Kirkpatrick pilgrimage and also homeless people in Dublin. And other programs then continued in the following weeks after the 12th of January, which was the first program. And then they gradually started with the magazine format. That's a couple of items in each half hour. And then they became single issue programs. And they achieved quite a popularity that was quite fantastic, really. Commanded huge audiences. Remember, we were in single channel land, so there was no competition for most of the country, except for the counties around the border, from other channels.
Yes, yeah.
So they commanded huge audiences. And they continued until 1996. We would have had various series each year, sometimes short series, sometimes longer ones, but nevertheless over 400 documentaries were shown from countries all over the world.
And why did they finish, Dermot?
Well, I suppose the main factor, there were two factors really. One was that in 1993, when Michael Dee, now our president, then minister, introduced the Broadcasting Act, saying that a certain percentage of RTE's programming had to be produced by independent producers, the field became very crowded with independent producers, independent production companies, whereas before there had only been three or four. That was Ryark, Eamon de Butler with his lovely series and Wiff and Spare, and Gareth Van Gelderen and David Shaw Smith doing his Hands programme about crafts around the country.
Beautiful programme.
They were the four main independent production companies in Ireland up to then. But after the early 90s, it became very difficult to get commissions, and it still is difficult to get commissions from RTE because there's so many production companies trying to make a living in this area. And then, of course, in 1996, Joe Dunn, Father Joe, died. And now the work of RIARC is being carried on, not to the same extent, but under the name ESRAS, and that's been run by Peter Kelly, who had joined RIARC in 85. But there's the RIARC Trust continues to look after the RIARC films and so on.
We'll talk about that, I think, after the break. But I want to talk about the programmes.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly I remember seeing a number of them, and it struck me that the programme makers often put themselves into quite dangerous positions long before we had Sky News following everything, that these were men who put themselves into quite precarious situations at times to tell us stories that otherwise Irish people would not have been aware of.
Well, that's true, but sometimes you have to do that if you want to get at the facts, the real facts. For example, people might remember, many older people anyway certainly remember, a program called Night Flight to Uli, which was the documentary we did on the war in Biafra in Nigeria. That was in 1968. And we had to run the gauntlet and fly in on a food aid plane from the island of Sao Tome. And even getting out to Sao Tome in the first place was an incredible adventure because there was no airline flying out there. We had to bum lifts on planes and things with dried fish and aspirin tablets and autocycles and go via Copenhagen to Casablanca, where we ran out of fuel. And down to Ghana and Accra and so on, down to South America, and then get into Biafra, flying into anti-aircraft fire, shells bursting around the plane, and then land on an airstrip in the middle of the jungle, really, which was just a widened road. The only airport had by now been captured by troops, the enemy troops, the federal troops, so they had to convert a roadway into an airstrip. It'd be like landing on the M1 here, or landing on the M7,
yes,
you know?
Yeah.
It was an extraordinary adventure. But it was the first documentary to tell the story of the Biafran War and of the famine and the reason why people in Ireland, why their help was so needed, why their aid was so needed here. And the fledgling organization Africa Concern had just begun here in Dublin. And but as soon as this film was shown, the funds really poured in, and it had the effect of helping Concern to flourish into the big organisation it is today.
Yeah,
RTE had already tried to do a programme on it, but a crew was turned back at Lisbon for political reasons, and so we didn't say a word to anybody about where we were going or when we were going. We just went quietly, and as I say, on the lift on volunteer planes.
And were you able to kind of use were some of the reasons that you were able to do some of the shows because of the strong missionary links that were in
absolutely
place?
There's no doubt about it that the missionaries were a hugely valuable link with the rest of the world. I mean, you'll find Irish missionaries, men and women, all over the world. And they were our, well, they were our researchers, our drivers, our hosts, our nurses and doctors very often.
Dear.
And they were tremendous, really tremendous. Mm. And we also got a wonderful, excuse me, we got a tremendous insight, and I hope we transmitted that insight through our programs into the lives of the missionaries. For many people in Ireland, they had family members in Africa, South America, China, Asia, Japan, all over the place, but had never seen what they actually did. And for the first time, they saw on their own screens in their sitting rooms the work that their uncles and cousins and brothers were doing.
Which must have been extraordinary.
In remote parts of the world.
Yeah.
And they had a big effect. And also, I think, they had an effect on the Irish Church because, for example, take Brazil, which we did in 1977. I think we did four or five programs there, including an hour-long portrait of the famous Archbishop Helder Camara, which was titled The Earth Belongs to Everyone. And that was also screened by the BBC and other stations around the world. But in that series in Brazil, we looked at liberation theology as it was in its heyday. And I think that, as Tom O'Dea, the critic for the Irish Press at the time, said in reviews of the series, that he felt the right team were looking at the church in Brazil, but really looking at it through a filter and seeing the Irish church underneath.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah. Yeah. And hoping that something of the energy and the enthusiasm and the vision of the Brazilian situation would transmit itself to the Irish scene.
Yeah. Dermot, I want to chat to you in part three about RIARC today, so we're going to take some more music and a short break.
Okay.
So stay with us. We'll continue our chat then about RIARC. Now we're going to take another piece of music. This is No Frontiers by the Celtic Tenors.